Okay, let's start the show.
For Thursday, December 19th, 2019, welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. Hello and welcome to the podcast this week as I adjust my headphone levels. Oh, what a week it is. I'm just going to go out here and commit you guys to next week. It's not our final podcast of the decade.
You don't know that. We have not committed.
I'm committing you guys right now. Even if it means
we're going to get a phone call.
There's going to be one more podcast where I am doing this alone in my house with a camera on me with two avatars of you guys that will not respond. We're going to have one more episode because there is so much to talk about that we can't talk about right now physically because we haven't seen The Rise of Skywalker at this point.
That's true. One of us will see it today, this being Wednesday.
Yeah. You know, I'm very wary of these things. I know you guys are smart and are muting certain terms on Twitter, but even the mention of I'm going to see something, I'm going to see it soon, I think, unfortunately, invites trolls to troll you. And so...
But this won't be out until after you've seen it.
That's why I'm comfortable even saying this right now. Yeah, Jeremy, I'm sorry. I've already invited the trolls to troll you. Please stay off Twitter. That is your responsibility and prerogative.
Do you know what? I've turned a new leaf. I watched most of the red carpet.
What?
You
attended a Fortnite event.
I'm completely open to spoilers.
I
say give it to me.
No.
I'm done with trying to avoid this stuff and keep this sacred because I've seen enough Star Wars films in adulthood to realize that I don't even care anymore, Norman.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Just bring whatever you got. Join the world in celebrating the movie nobody's seen yet.
Look, I'm looking forward to 2020 when Jeremy releases Zen and the Art of Star Wars. Your book on how you're handling this. This
the
is
views
ridiculous.
Of Jeremy Williams. One, Jeremy Williams, do not reflect those of Tested.com nor the other members of This Is Only a Test. We remain optimistic and enthusiastic.
You'll get there.
Even though at the point today, we have not, we've seen at least a Rotten Tomatoes score.
No, we haven't. Somebody at the Tested office ruined it for us.
None of us in this room.
No. The person you would least expect.
I know. It's rather unfortunate. But how are you guys doing? Jeremy Williams, Kishore, Hari?
The holiday spirit is upon me. I'm ready. We're hosting Christmas this year. I'm going full tourist in San Francisco.
What does that mean? How many people are you hosting?
There'll be 13 of us.
Holy cannoli.
My goodness.
But that includes myself.
I mean, I would hope so. You would not be excluded to your own event. Jeremy, how about you?
I am looking forward to, I am in a state of bliss having shipped all of my Christmas presents.
Oh,
I got, wow. That is what the Christmas holidays stresses me out the most is just getting the presents out because I got family all over the country.
Yeah.
And I did that on Monday on schedule and I wrapped everything myself. I didn't ship a single thing from Amazon.
So I'm sorry, you even if you bought something from Amazon, you took it out of the box, rewrapped it and then put it in a shipping box presumably. So everything is box within box.
Yes. Wrapped, put into a box, wrapped by myself with a note handwritten.
Wow. Itself is the gift. I wouldn't be surprised if there was nothing inside the then Christmas present and except another note says the effort was put in for me to.
That's exactly right.
Did you use the new rage from Twitter, which is turning the box diagonally to get extra coverage of your gift wrap?
Yeah. I learned about that after I needed that advice. But that is good advice. That is good.
I love going to malls during this time of year. You know, obviously it's very festive, a lot of decorations, and, support some local high school student who they have those stations set up that they will help wrap boxes for you. And I remember doing that back in high school.
Wait,
and
where? At the mall?
At the mall. They set up kiosks, and it's tip-based. You pay, and they will help. And no
usually
one wraps a present better than a high school student who's wrapped their books in Safeway bags.
Yeah, usually like a store will donate the gift wrap and stuff and supplies, yeah. And so it's just all going to support some local charity or local high school.
Do you remember when Amazon used to actually wrap gifts that were gift wrapped
and not just put them in a bag?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That this used to be what happened. Like they would take, they had actual paper and tape. Not anymore.
Oh my God. We were also able to take Avery to the local mall and get his first photos with Santa. And I gotta say, yeah. I have a few thoughts about this. Like,
How did he handle it?
Well, I mean, he was great.
Okay.
He was a champ. I mean, he actually did not deliver what we had hoped. We got three photos when we had hoped one of them would be crying, screaming. Mm-hmm. We wanted a happy and we wanted a screaming. You know, and he was happy throughout. So he
took
it like
terrible.
I know.
Exactly. How could you betray us like that, son?
Yeah. A couple thoughts about the mall Santa photography experience. One, I appreciate that it happens. I don't mind the fee. It's expensive. It's like $50.
What?
Yeah. It's $50 because they know they can.
Do you get a letter from Santa for that?
No, you get a couple printouts that they print off of a off-the-shelf photo printer from like Office Depot right there, and you get the digital prints as, you know, relatively low-res JPEGs that go through some type of bad image processing. I don't mind the price. It's very expensive, but if it's going to be something I do once a year, it supports the employees there, it supports this business, fine. I wish they would actually get good equipment. I was standing there and I was looking at that camera they were using. They were using like not even a APS-C sensor DSLR. Yeah, it had interchangeable lenses. It was like a Micro Four Thirds sensor.
Oh, no.
The lighting was flat. It was framed improperly. Like I was judgy about their photography setup. Now, I understand they go through hundreds of families a day.
Yeah.
And they really want to capture the moment. That's going to be the important part, you know, capturing the moment. And it's tough when you have the unpredictability of families and children. I will say Santa himself, a pro. Santa knew exactly how to hold the baby.
This is his time of year, man. He comes out.
He knew exactly how to cheese it up and get exactly the right moments. Santa not blinking for these photos. You're not going to need Santa was and giving different type of smiles. He was wonderful.
Wow. Was this at Stonestown, by the way?
This was at Stonestown.
Yeah, I've seen their Santa setup. Yeah. He seems like a good Santa.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder if it's the same one every year that they get.
What are you implying? It's Santa.
It's Santa. The way that they have this set up this mall is just your typical big Christmas tree with the giant chair, some presents around. I've seen other setups. I traveling around middle America, like even at Thanksgiving, we saw a Santa setup where there was a little more diorama setup, you know, inside. Like they had, it was more like a living room setup, and I wish we had that here. But, you know, for the first of hopefully many Santa photos I've got to take.
Are you at $50, dude? I can't believe you did that.
Yeah.
If that
was the pricing back when my kid was on, I'd be like, Santa's not real, dude.
I mean, I guess you go to Comic-Con and you pay $30 to get, you know, Brent Spiner's photo.
Right. Santa's assigned the photos here.
You haven't been to Comic-Con for a while, my friend. It's not $30.
What is it?
It like most pictures now are like $75.
Are you serious?
Depends on the con. I think it depends on the market.
Wow.
And what the market will sustain.
Yeah, but you're looking at $50 and up, my friend.
All right.
For most people.
Well, Santa must have gone to Comic-Con and learned a thing or two.
and like part of me is like, oh, I wish I just brought my own camera. Because they say no personal photos, but I could just be like a tourist walking around and like gorilla taking some photos and then off the side, pulling family side, hey, for $5, I'll give you some really nice photos.
Yeah.
And just hang out there all day. I wonder how long would it take before they would just usher me away.
One photo.
Yeah, one photo. I'm just getting some mall photos here. It's a free country. I have my rights. Yeah. So that was my past weekend experience. Let's cut through the chit chat and get to our
top story this week.
Was there any debate about the top story?
Oh, it's the end of an era.
Oh my!
The saga is over.
Well, now we've said this before. We said this in 1983, right? We said this whenever the prequels
the
ended.
Saga concludes,
and now it's the prequel or the trilogy of trilogies.
See, but we said it with different intonation. Like in 83, we're like the saga is over, and we were sad.
Yeah.
After the prequels, we were like, you know, relieved.
Happy. Yeah. Right.
I feel like I don't know where I'm at with these. I've had an up and down relationship with these two films, and so I feel a little uneasy going into this one.
It's so interesting because this is definitely, it feels like, is J.J. Abrams, of course, coming back to direct this, and from the earlier reviews, it feels like a J.J. Abrams film. So as a trilogy itself, it doesn't feel like it's going to be cohesive in the same way that it would be if it was like the Russo brothers directing three Marvel films in a row.
Well, the original trilogy had three different directors.
That's very true.
And it also didn't feel cohesive.
And the prequel trilogy had the same director.
Return of the Jedi, as soon as the Ewoks show up, it loses cohesion.
I think back to when the prequel trilogy concluded, when Revenge of the Sith came out, and how by that point we were all so beaten down, and we were all had some form of PTSD that we all lived in like a reality distortion bubble. I remember coming out of Revenge of the Sith, and everyone was like, "This is finally it! Oh my God, they finally got it right after two movies."
I remember Kevin Smith saying that before.
And of course that one opened with that incredible space battle, that long shot as Anakin's flying his starfighter, and I wonder if that will be the case for this time as well. Regardless of what you thought about Last Jedi and Force Awakens, where you feel like, you know, because it is the conclusion of something, they're putting all the chips on the table, and it is that final relief that it's out. No more hiding from spoilers. Mm-hmm. No more anticipation. The saga is done. Will that, just the end of it, lift this movie into another reality distortion bubble?
I don't understand the question.
Yeah,
Are we going to be wrong about our thoughts about this movie 5 years later?
Ah, I don't think so. And in a way, this is a weird ending for me. In the way, I don't think it'll age well. I have very low expectations for this movie. And I think that's the right place to be. But I think part of the reason I feel a little like that that the ending is what's happening in real life around it. That Carrie Fisher died. Like Harrison Ford... like leaving the film, like Mark, like there's a Peter Mayhew dying, like all of these things, like there's the people behind those characters are leaving more than anything else. So there's a finality that I think is just going to happen, that we're going to see it and it's going to be what it is. And I don't think it's going to age much differently.
It's going to be what it is. The saddest thing, the saddest perspective we could have.
It's low expectations come to fruition.
I have perspective here. I had an interesting experience over the weekend where I showed my 12-year-old son one of my favorite movies of all time. It's one of the movies that I've called my favorite movie in years past. It's Rushmore by Wes Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And one, he didn't love it. He's 12. He's never been in love. Like, that's... You gotta go through certain things. You have to be in a certain phase of life when you appreciate certain things.
Yeah. You haven't sent him away to boarding school yet. Right. Like, all of those things.
And I am so far... I'm decades past that point in my life where I loved that movie that it didn't resonate with me as much. And so what I realized is this... What everybody, you know, I think already knows on some level, which is that Star Wars is for kids. And Star Wars appeals to, which is not to say that not you can't be an inner child, not to say that it can't be, you know, adults and like the films, but you have to be at a certain point in life to get what you got out of it when I was 9 and I loved Jedi.
And that doesn't preclude the ability for a film to mean something different and be meaningful for an older audience in the way a Pixar film reads differently for kids and adults.
Right. But I think Pixar films intentionally resonate with different demographics. And
intentionally.
Not,
you don't think Star Wars...
I think Star Wars has been mishandled ever since, you know, 1983. I love Mandalorian. You know, mm-hmm. you think it's fallen short of its potential, yep. But I think that the last episode in particular...
I haven't seen it yet.
There's no way that this new Star Wars film can live up to that single episode.
Really?
I think.
Wow. That's
wow. I'm going to go home and watch that right now. I think the indictment of the newest two films, and probably what I expect from the third film, is it feels like the fingerprints of a mega corporation on it. Like so many cooks in the kitchen, the creative direction kind of bouncing back and forth. That you don't get that like singular vision that has weird moments. Like we're not going to get a Porkins anymore. Like a character that just shows up unexplained, dies and becomes like a beloved character.
Whoa. I think like you say that, but like even in Solo, a film that was not as well regarded, had the Jon Favreau character that I think is exactly that.
Is that a Porkins?
Part of the problem with Porkins not existing anymore is that Porkins was well cast. Like, he was a dude who was, like, in this movie. Nobody knew it was going to be a special film. They were hoping it would be a box office, you know, break even. And he was cast as a space pilot.
Nobody knew it was going to be... No one had the expectations for it to be a special film.
And nowadays, everyone playing a Porkins role is somebody's friend or niece or nephew who wants to be in a Star Wars film. They're not even actors. And that comes across.
Or they are actors that you recognize as bit players and character
right,
actors.
Right, exactly. But they think it's not going to matter. They think they can throw these, you know, fans into small bit parts and it won't affect the film. And it probably doesn't for kids. Mm-hmm. But part of the problem with being an adult is you start to recognize all the beats of storytelling, and you see foreshadowing that's, you know, spoon-fed, and it's not as enjoyable.
You unless, want to be surprised.
Unless there is an adult, you know, oriented like fabric woven into it like Pixar does.
So low expectations, perspective / cynicism aside, I still think this is going to be an enjoyable film. I think the action sequences... especially probably what I anticipate some major lightsaber duels between Kylo and Rey are going to be spectacular. I just think there's going to be an element of cheese later on top that I worry about. But I think it's going to be a beautiful film, and I think there's going to be moments that are great. Daisy Ridley has nailed every part of these movies that she's been in.
She's the best part of them.
And so I expect nothing less from her in this movie.
I watched The Force Awakens last night, or yesterday, in preparation. I watched The Last Jedi probably Thursday night. And I try so hard to, like, let go of what I need that film to
let
be.
Let go of your fear.
Do you need Ben Kenobi?
Let go of your hate.
Let go, Jeremy.
You know, I thought after, what's it been, 4 years, that I'd be able to approach it with fresh eyes and just let... And some of it I could, and I really do appreciate, as you said, the action sequences and some of the moments in the movie, like where Solo dies. These were well done, and I liked them. But so much of it is ham-fisted, and I feel even more. The Last Jedi did not resonate with me, as I recall.
I think it's okay to take Star Wars off the pedestal. The original trilogy will still exist. Hopefully the original trilogy, pre-special editions, will come out some point, and we can love those films. But yeah, I'm okay with... the reality is we're not going to not have Star Wars, new Star Wars, in our lifetimes. And they have said that they're treating it as a more precious property, not like a Marvel series or the MCU, and they should be special. And so after this is done, they'll take a break, and I'll be excited to see something that's not the Skywalker saga. Yeah.
Any speculations?
Of what that is?
No, of what this movie will entail. Like, who's Rey? Like, that's
I don't even want to play that game. Yeah. I'm actually like not thinking about it. I made that mistake with Watchmen, where I dove too much into the online discussion around it, and it took some of the surprises away, which decreased some of my potential enjoyment.
It's all that pressure that they have to connect dots that makes these films ham-fisted. Like, I felt like, having just watched Force Awakens, like when they stumble upon the Falcon, like it's on this random planet. What are the odds of that? And then
what are the odds?
Solo,
don't tell me the odds.
Solo and Chewie, like tractor beam, they happen to see the Falcon in space.
No, they detect them. They detected the ship.
Do they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think...
From how far away?
I've been playing that speculation game in my head for a while because it's hard to avoid it. And I think the only thing that makes real sense to me... Like, I know the Rey lineage will finally be explained somehow, some way. Nothing in that era makes sense to me. So the only thing that I think is definitely going to happen is we're going to get the redemption of Ben Solo. I think
you think the redemption is going to happen.
I think there'll be redemption for.
Well, that would follow the original trilogy arc. And Leia said that she felt there was good in him.
Oh, and I think this is a Leia story, not a Luke story. I think she's going to be a key.
This is a Rey story.
Well, for sure. I think Leia is going to be the Yoda figure of the story.
Yeah.
But my wild prediction, I have a wild prediction. I think Harrison Ford is in this movie.
Whoa.
That's my wild prediction.
That's the reason I don't even want to speculate. Because
but
now
how can he be in the story, right? That's like my crazy.
You've incepted an idea that I didn't even consider, and now any cue, any foreshadowing of any, if that became a surprise, that would ruin my complete shock. Because have taken that shock.
I'm sorry.
Of that potential surprise.
But how can he, like, it makes no sense.
I'm just going to not think about that.
It's like if Yaddle came back. Everybody like, why is Yaddle here? I'm trying to make Yaddle a thing.
I am envious of you guys because your world of comic books has really taken over. Like the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe is so successful and great. Like they're good at what they do and they're just nailing film after film. I'm envious of you guys that you have that and I'm glad to be on that train with you.
Last thing related to Star Wars, Jeremy, this also bleeds into technology and video gaming. You attended or watched the Star Wars Fortnite event.
I thought you were going to say the Rise of Skywalker red carpet because I did watch some of that, but I did not attend it. The Fortnite event was fascinating. I guess they announced that during the Game Awards that it would be happening. And so my 12-year-old son, who doesn't even play Fortnite anymore, he was curious enough to boot it up and check it out. And I got to say, like, that felt like the future because at, what was it, like 8 p.m.? I forget when it was. Whenever it was, Jeff Keighley came on the sound speaker. Like, everybody in the game. How many millions of people playing Fortnite? Everybody heard him.
On every server.
Everybody heard him talk. And he said, testing, 1, 2, 1, 2, testing.
The voice of God. It's the end of Truman Show. Who are you?
And
I am the creator.
Exactly. That was exactly what it was like. And my son flipped out. He called me. He's like, Dad, you won't believe what just happened. Jeff just came on the loudspeaker. And then, so I go down, because like I even can't be bothered with Star Wars these days, so I had to be like enticed to go watch this thing. And so I went down, and it's 10 minutes late, so they get everybody a chance to get in there, and then at 10 minutes after the deadline, nobody can hurt each other anymore.
He brought peace upon the world. This is like a Watchmen crossover.
And then
I did it 35 minutes ago.
And then my son said, "What?" He saw something on the screen and said, "Focus." And I guess he doesn't do that often. But it said, "What is focus?" And so he hit L2 to focus, and it moved the camera onto the sky. And then a beat later, the Millennium Falcon warps in, and all the Star Wars music comes on, and the Falcon swoops around the landscape.
Wait. So on each server. As people are playing, let's say you're in the middle of a round where the last three people are surviving, and they're like hunting each other.
Oh, and this is actually, there was only one game mode you could join, and it was the special event.
Okay, so it wasn't an actual combat engagement where they're like, peace, let's pause our conflict for 30 minutes with this special message from our sponsor.
It was, though. You could fight. Like, there were teams. But I don't know if
one person's like not interested. Like, what are you guys looking at? What are you guys looking at up there? I just want to play.
When people died, they would respawn. So it must have been a special kind of like deathmatch kind of situation.
Okay, so the Falcon comes.
So Falcon trailed by TIE fighters and Star Destroyers warp in, and the Falcon does some pretty amazing flights. What do you call them? Like dogfight moves, and then destroys the TIE fighters, and then lands on the platform. Actually, everybody who's standing on the platform gets blown off of it. And then the Falcon lands, out comes like a hologram that is Jeff Keighley, basically. But it's not him. Like, he's just speaking through the... It's not his avatar. It's some generic hologram avatar. He speaks through it, and then a stormtrooper comes off and starts talking to everybody. I don't know what the point of that was, but apparently, like, he says he's in the next film.
Oh, you know who that was?
No, I don't know who that was.
That was Ben Schwartz from Parks and Rec.
Because he did sound very comfortable. Like, he sounded like a celebrity. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, JJ runs down the ramp with the Falcon.
A character. This is not video. This is...
No, this is a 3D avatar.
Right.
Custom made for JJ Abrams.
Do you think he's like... He did performance capture, or he's holding a gamepad, unfortunately, or a WASD keyboard?
Unfortunately, like, it looked like all of his animations were canned. And so even his walk and his emotes.
So how did people... Was this streamed, or like did you download the animation package and all the assets as a player locally, and this was rendered locally?
Yeah, it was all rendered locally.
So you had the assets queued up on your computer.
Yes, you have JJ on your PC.
People did not know they had the Falcon and TIE Fighters.
Right. So JJ comes on, and then he's like, oh, look how skinny I am. I've never been so skinny. And he's making jokes.
Whole bit.
Yeah, he's the whole thing. And then, like, he does dancing. And then, like, they turn him into something else. And then, they turn him into, like, the default Fortnite player, which I guess is an inside joke for Fortnite players. And then he changed back to JJ. And he said, well, anyway, I'd like to show you... What do you think that this clip's going to be about? And then you could stand in any of four quadrants, and you could guess, you could vote for what you thought the clip was going to be about. And then...
So players were, like, running...
Yeah, into a quadrant. And then, so you voted, which had no effect, and then you got to you got to watch the clip.
Don't describe the clip.
I won't. It came down on the big screen, watched the clip, which is, like, 30 seconds. You could describe the clip and not spoil anything. And then...
It put up the Rotten Tomato score.
And then they said, that's it, and we want to thank you all for coming out. And one more question, what's your favorite color? And then everyone votes on their favorite color, and then they fly off in the Falcon, and then everybody has a lightsaber in the color that they voted on.
What?
Yeah, and the red one is Kylo's, so you get the cool thing at the bottom.
The hilt, yeah.
And the lightsaber is pretty powerful, right? And it can, like, deflect.
And so then everybody jumps into this massive lightsaber battle.
Oh, my God.
And now everyone in Fortnite has lightsabers.
Wait, for the foreseeable future?
Yeah.
As a permanent...
I think it's a permanent thing.
No, it's a loot item, though, after that game. Like, you have to go find it in the game. It doesn't just, like...
So everyone who was in the event got it, and everyone else has to find it. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I don't think you get to keep it. I think it's, like, every time you join a game now, you have to find it on the map.
Oh, really? Okay, well, there you go.
Wow, what a technical achievement! That's a digital event.
Yeah,
unlike anything in recent memory, because it crosses over. It wasn't just people who care about the game. I mean, of course, there's really haven't been very few games that have been played at this scale.
Marshmello did a concert in Fortnite, and that was sort of I think the testbed for this technology.
This makes me think of like Ready Player One, when Halliday passed away, and then the announcement, the video comes up in the beginning of the film, was the book, and everyone in the Oasis pauses and watches the video.
Right.
Like, this is that type of, our differences don't matter right now.
Yeah.
Let us consume.
Yeah. Yeah.
This marketing.
I mean, I thought it was brilliant. It really did feel futuristic. I don't know.
And you watch it over the shoulder?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was fine.
Did you feel like you missed out because you weren't like on a phone or on a you had your avatar running around and voting and participating?
Oh, well, only from that sense that I didn't actually get something. But you know, whatever. Since I don't have a dog in the race of Fortnite, I am totally fine with that.
Oh, interesting. I can't wait. What's the next big event? Didn't they did a Endgame event, right?
Mm-hmm. And so this where is you can like get the Infinity Gauntlet.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. It's a cool futuristic thing. I thought that was neat. Is that all?
That's it.
Okay, let's move on. Nope.
Culture.
Just a real brief apology. Like, I know people don't want to hear people like being negative about Star Wars. I know that, and I apologize. And we're done because they're done. So we're done. All right, that's it.
Okay. Hey, other movies. We're gonna get through this relatively quickly. We had a second trailer for Pixar's upcoming film Onward. This is a film I'm mixed on. Totally.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
I'm not super pumped by.
Just bring me Soul. Like, that's how I kind of feel.
Right?
Yeah.
It's not even like it's not because it's not like a sequel. Like, of course, I was very hyped for Incredibles 4 and Toy Story 4, or Incredibles 2 and Toy Story 4. But, it's not that it's not a sequel. Yeah. I appreciate original stories, but, like, I'm looking more forward to to Soul than this.
Pete Doctor's new film.
This doesn't feel as universal. It's more of a sci-fi fantasy epic kind of tale. I mean, like, it's from Pixar. They have a good lineage. It could be good, but it just seems to...
They have the best lineage.
In terms of the trailer, it didn't represent this, like, core thing. Though it is about kids trying to find their dad. I mean, I'm not spoiling very much. And probably that's going to reveal a lot.
Yeah, I guess we see in the trailer, they only are able to bring back their dad for one day, and they do bring back half of him.
So there's going to be some heartstrings to pull here, your relationships between families and lost family members. It's a road trip movie. They're calling it, it's a quest, so their take on a road trip, the genre. Mm-hmm. And it's not that that's not an exciting genre. I'm waiting for the one thing in this film that kind of hooks me in, and I haven't seen it yet from this trailer. Mm-hmm. I'm going to watch it. I
watched freaking Angry Birds, dude. I will watch this for sure. I'm not worried about not seeing it, and with my expectations so low, they can only be
on the flip side
exceeded.
Though I am excited about this.
Oh,
we got a first look.
Bill and Ted, three pictures from the Bill and Ted sequel, Bill and Ted 3, will release. You have a shaven Keanu Reeves. You have the first look at William Sadler is back as Death. Hopefully that's not too big of a spoiler.
From Bogus Journey?
The second film.
Yeah, that'd be Bogus Journey.
And then you also, he looks looking a little old there, Death. And then it is, of course, about legacy. So you have Bill and Ted's children.
She's from Atypical.
The Bill, Keanu Reeves, is he Bill or Ted? I never remember.
What? Her.
I know, but she plays Keanu Reeves' daughter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the other one from the movie The Babysitter and Ready or Not, she plays, what's his name? The other guy's daughter.
Bill S. Preston Esquire?
Yes, Bill's daughter.
How about that?
Yeah, so it'll be about family.
Cool.
Very excited for that. I am also of mixed feelings for a upcoming comic book movie. It's an animated adaptation of the Elseworlds story, Red Son. I'm ready to give you a history lesson here.
S-O-N.
Red Son. Superman, Red Son. Have you heard about this?
No.
I've heard about it. I'm not watching the trailer because I don't want to know.
Superman, Red Son was a miniseries story that was told in alternate reality. Mm-hmm. Superman of what if? What if Superman, his ship from Krypton landed in Soviet Russia.
Oh, yeah, cool.
And was raised by Stalin. Mm-hmm. And lived, grew up to be a communist. How would the world accept him, or what would his, how would the world have changed?
That's right. You are a product of where you grow up. That's right.
It's the nature versus nurture of it all. And there are familiar faces from the DC universe, ranging from Wonder Woman, Batman, Lois Lane, even Lex Luthor, and some other surprises. And it's well regarded. It's by Mark Miller, who was the writer behind Kick-Ass, among the many other high concept graphic novels and comic series. And this one is definitely high concept. The miniseries was great, and so now it's being adapted into a animated film, part of that DCU animated universe. Jason Isaacs plays Superman, does the voice of Superman with definitely a Russian accent, which was kind of weird, even though I expected him to have it. It's a very heavy Russian accent. And I think some of the DC animated films have been good. Some, I think, are just like exercises.
They've been slipping
in adaptation.
They've been slipping recently.
Yeah, it's tough to do these films and live up to what you've imagined in your head and what you've seen in the graphic novels. One more trailer, In the Heights. This is Lin-Manuel Miranda's Tony Award-winning musical, the one he did before Hamilton.
Can I play
Hamilton.
The music?
We cannot play the music, but it is the film adaptation of that. This is a more traditional film adaptation rather than what they did with Les Mis. So this will have the music, and it's filmed traditionally.
You're saying that they didn't live record the vocals?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Which is too bad, because I do think that adds a lot to the live performance aspect. They could have done that, I think. Assuming that they have all the same people doing the acting as they do doing the
vocals.
Yeah,
I don't know if the cast for this is like what they did for Rent, where they brought back the original cast members.
Well, the guy playing the lead is.
It is?
Yeah,
okay.
He played the lead on
Broadway.
Oh,
okay.
And he played Philip Schuyler on Broadway.
Oh, what's his? Yes, okay, yeah, yeah.
But not Schuyler. It would be Philip Hamilton, right? Yeah.
Yes, he played Hamilton's son well as John Lawrence.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, great. Yeah, I like him. He was in the Lady Gaga movie.
Does this imply to you what it implies to me, which is like if this is a hit,
then they'll
do the same thing for Hamilton?
No, Lin-Manuel has said that Hamilton will never be adapted into a traditional film. What they did, they filmed two performances with the original cast, and that is being cut right now for theatrical release.
I mean, that'll be live vocals.
Just wait. I mean, he's been on this epic tear.
That's what I'm saying.
Everything he touches turns to gold, and then he's going to have a miss.
Did you see Mary Poppins?
Oh.
Mary Poppins was fine.
Exactly. It was just fine.
Moana was fine.
Moana was fantastic.
Yeah.
I will not have
no Frozen.
The besmirching of Moana on this podcast.
I went to a Moana sing-along. I was like bawling for most of it.
Have you seen Frozen 2, by the way?
I have not.
I'm really fed up with you two.
Why? What do we do?
Because
things that annoy me.
There are things we could talk about in that film, and you guys are too macho to go see some Prince.
It's not a macho thing.
It's purely a time constraint.
You know, my kid hated Frozen, and he's like, I was like, you want to go see Frozen 2?
He's too macho for it.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question I'm not too macho for it.
Okay.
Most of my watching is of cartoons in some form.
Well, we'll talk about it when you guys eventually see it.
Okay.
Probably in the new year.
All right.
Yeah. What will probably not come, and actually won't come in the new year or any year forthcoming after that, is the Akira film from Taika Waititi. Warner Brothers has removed the film from the schedule. It's rather unfortunate. Of course, Taika is now doing Thor. What is it? Love and Thunder? Mm-hmm. Hard work with that, but we were also really hoping that he'd be able to do the Akira adaptation. You know, that's going to be in limbo for a long time. We are less than 1 month, is that correct? Less than 1 month away from Star Trek Picard?
Wow. How do you know that? When does it come out?
It's January.
January 23rd, I want to say.
Okay, so we're just about a month away from Star Trek Picard.
And that's going to be a weekly release cycle?
Yes.
All right.
On CBS All Access. But CBS has enough confidence in the show that they've renewed it for season two.
That's good, man.
I don't like that.
I like that.
I don't. I wanted to have at least the speculation that it could be the limited series. Like, the fact that they've already announced season two tells me that, you know, Picard probably doesn't die at the end of this. Not that I wanted him to, but I wanted to be worried that he would.
Oh, boy.
By the end of the series.
Look at you.
It gives away.
Is that how you felt about Next Generation? It's like, oh, man, now I know there's another season. Now I know Picard doesn't die.
The stakes are a little bit lower.
Don't be so sure. What if there's another Picard?
It is. They wouldn't
renew a show without his involvement.
All I'm doing is just planting ideas in Norm's head throughout the Christmas season.
That's good.
Harrison Ford is still alive.
This is so different than, you know, not knowing whether there'd be another season of Expanse or Next Generation, because this is a revival. This is built as something special, as a limited engagement, and that they had a good idea and they want to execute it, not just, you know. And of course, I'm happy that all the crew and the cast and the people working on the show are going to hopefully come back and get a chance to further the story. But I also am a fan of stories that have proper beginning, middles, and ends. And
try to be a little optimistic here. This tells you that they are so sure about this series. Like, they have seen the episodes and they're like, slam dunk.
They crunch the numbers. They're like, already people are subscribing to All Access. I'm with Jeremy on this. This is nothing but good news.
Yeah.
I'll try to be optimistic about that. I mean, I'm definitely optimistic about the show.
Hold out hope that he'll die, Norm. Hold out hope.
Hold out hope that there will be tension that will make me wonder that whether or not some of the characters won't make it. And knowing that there will be a second season,
you've watched too much
that.
Game of Thrones.
I think I finally realized Norm is part of the Borg collective, and that's why he's rooting for Picard to die. Yeah. It like finally makes sense.
Give me a cliffhanger. If you're going to do that, give me a cliffhanger on the scale of Best of Both Worlds.
Oh, God, yeah.
And make us wait a year for it. Something that we're going to get in 2020, theoretically, on the platform Quibi?
Mm-hmm.
Chibi?
Yep.
Chibi, Quibi. This is that short-form social network video service. All the content's going to be real short. Is a return to Legends of the Hidden Temple. This was of my generation in the 90s growing up. Very popular Nickelodeon game show. It was all the fantasy that kids of my age wanted of climbing through, you know, and a obstacle course set decked to be a South American temple. And
wait, it was always the same obstacle course?
They could rearrange.
Oh, wow.
It was like a cross section of the obstacle course. So you could see the contestants going, you know, running alongside, but the room layouts would slightly change and the place where they find the objects. And
okay.
Every kid in my generation watches wanted to run through that course.
Wow.
And The Rock is bringing this show to adult in 2020. It's a revival where it will be adults who get to run through a new version of this course.
Combination like Ninja Warrior and...
I hope so.
And Legends of the Hidden Temple.
Yeah.
You know, since you're watching the live stream, you know, one of the hosts of that live stream, Anthony Carboni, was on this show as a kid.
Just as a regular kid. Mm-hmm. Wow.
You can watch his episode.
It's where he caught the bug.
Yeah, that's right.
And last bit of pop culture news...
Weirdest story of the week.
The Far Side.
Gary Larson.
Gary Larson's Far Side is going to be online for the first time. You can't find Far Side comics online.
Okay.
He's been notably resistant to it because of people stealing his comics and posting them everywhere else.
Image of the Far Side you find through Google Image is a pirated, scanned image.
Okay.
And there will be new comics.
Well, where's it going to be found?
On thefarside.com. It's like, I remember this so fondly.
Mm-hmm. The comic?
Yes.
Yeah, dude. The one frame.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Absolute brilliance.
I was promised that when I paid an exorbitant amount of money for the complete Far Side two-book anthology compendium...
That it would be complete?
That it would be complete. How dare they release more...
Yeah.
And make my collection now obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
Entitlement 101. All right, that does it for pop culture. Let's move on.
Oh, wow. That was fast. This is great, though, because I can't wait to see what he has to say about the internet. Right?
That's right. It's been offline since the internet basically existed.
He's got a lot going on there, I bet.
Yeah, will it work? I don't know. I don't want to speculate. Will the Far Side work today? Of course it's going to work. Gary Larson's a genius. Okay, technology news. We're getting through it relatively quickly. Apple Arcade. Now there's an option as opposed to paying $5 a month, mm-hmm. AKA $60 a year. You can get a whole annual subscription to Apple Arcade for $50 a year now. Save $10 off an annual subscription, which tells me, one, it's not selling as well as they had hoped a couple months into it, or that retention has been low.
Right.
And in fact, reading this news reminded me to cancel my subscription, which I did after reading the news. I'm just not playing it anymore.
Really?
Like we talked about, like, what would the release cadence be and could they sustain quality for this? And I don't think they have enough to justify $5 a month for me now.
When your kids are playing iPad games, you'll think otherwise.
Yeah, when that happens, I will come back and subscribe to it. But
as I say, no ads and no in-app purchases, huge.
I think they still have yet to prove that they can keep up the quality along with the quantity of regular releases.
Yep.
Because that's not easy. Games take a long time to be made.
Yep.
Other quick news. DualShock 4, you know, as we're probably getting a new PlayStation announced next year, Sony has now a attachment for DualShock 4 that adds buttons on the back of the controller, kind of like flipper buttons almost, where you would use your middle finger to grab as opposed to the trigger or the trigger buttons, the shoulder buttons. And it's customization that you can then program, you know, and remap to the buttons to the back.
Neat.
It's just different type of ergonomics. Hey, we didn't even talk about the Game Awards. Game Awards were last week. We mentioned Jeff Keighley earlier and the Fortnite event. But they dropped a ton of news, some of which we're going to talk about in the VR minute. But we saw the design for the next Xbox. Xbox
Series.
X Series.
Series X.
Series X. Xbox Series X.
Right.
Xbox Series X might as well be a PC gaming tower.
You know,
that's what it looked like.
Consoles have been PCs for a while now.
Yeah.
So there they are. They're just, it's a PC.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's looking, I bet it'll be a really good deal. Like, to build that PC costs a lot more.
It's fair.
But you can only do Xbox games. You're not also using it for
And you
photo processing and video rendering.
Won't be playing your VR games on it.
No, that's something that they have, even though they mention with the Xbox One X, being able to do, that's not a path that they're pushing for. Calling it Xbox Series X, of course, the speculation is that this is not the only Xbox that they're working on, that it'll be, maybe there'll be a Series Y, or that there'll be two models of this, because this could presumably be an expensive console, and I think they have had success with Xbox One, doing the Xbox One X and Xbox One S, as well as the discless edition. And so going forward, I could see them doing different versions, you know, and with a minimum viable product, the baseline spec, being able to run it at, you know, 4K, because this one can do 4K plus ray tracing 120 hertz. And so it's going to be allowing developers to scale up the graphics as people get more powerful hardware, much like PC gaming.
The naming scheme is absurd.
It is.
If I weren't involved or following the industry, I would not be able to tell you where they drew the line between generations. You know, it's very strange. I don't know what the deal is there. PlayStation, much easier.
They like that letter X.
I guess so.
No more number. I mean,
they were basically screwed when they went to 360.
Yeah.
Like at that point, it was all over.
Xbox. Yeah. 360, 720, 1080. They can go a full 1080.
1440?
Yeah.
What did you do?
I don't even know. What they could call it, if not for numbers.
Whatever. Yeah, stupid.
Still has to be Xbox. Series X. X Cloud. I mean,
and at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the naming convention is. I think this is going to be like, they're going to push hard on subscriptions here. Mm-hmm. And that's really going to be...
The Game Pass, yeah.
That's going to test, you know, where the appetite is for that kind of model.
The tower-like design also means that it's probably not going to fit underneath a lot of entertainment centers that people have their Blu-ray players or their Apple TVs.
Oriented the other way, though.
Can it?
I think so.
They did say it could be.
Yeah. Mm.
And it does have a drive. It has a slot for Blu-rays.
Blu-ray disc that will play Blu-ray video.
Right, don't know.
Because the current Xbox does not.
It costs money.
Oh, no, sorry. The current Xbox does. It's the PS4.
Right.
That's not. So, of course, I think they will license that out. People will still be buying Blu-ray, 4K Blu-rays. The tower design is something that also is in the Mac Pro, and iFixit did a teardown of the Mac Pro. They gave it a repairability score of 9 out of 10.
Well, that's very high.
What?
They said the Festivus miracle is upon us. Apple released a Mac that is very, very repairable. The only part, and upgradable, and the only part that's proprietary is the SSD that has the T2 Apple security chip on there.
Weird.
But otherwise, RAM, you can buy your ECC RAM, you can, you know, swap things out, and the, you know, it's been well reviewed so far with the airflow and the noise, and so...
You gonna get gun through one?
No. Christmas? Gunther.
You could get him.
You might
some,
get end loops if you're lucky.
Why don't you just get him the wheels for it? Oh, that'll be like, yeah. That's like $400 bucks right there.
Yeah, let's get him.
I mean, I want to shout out iFixit for their review, because they're like, hey, it looks like it can grate cheese. And so they grated cheese on it.
That hurts my eyes.
I love it.
That makes me so sad.
I don't care for that either. Take that off.
Yeah, no.
Why not?
Because I have a baby who makes a mess with cheese all the time, and I'm just kidding.
I like their fun with expensive tech products.
It was fun. Yeah. In the world of electric vehicles, there is rumor that Congress in the United States may be extending the EV credits, or at least restructuring the EV credits right now. Some electric car makers like Tesla has lowered the prices because of the anticipation that the EV credits will go away come next year. They reach their number of units sold where the credits get federal tax rebates get phased out. Mm-hmm. But there's a chance that that will be restructured and extended for another 400,000 or up to 400,000 units
in
cars, which is good for not only Tesla, potential Tesla owners, and you know what, the market for cars, the price of their cars might go up after that, but be good for existing car manufacturers who had done kind of early EVs and eaten into the allocation for tax credits to then still compete and release things like their EV pickup trucks and have their, let their customers benefit from
the tax credit. I wonder if part of the thinking here is that at least Tesla, I know, has used up all of their tax credits. And they didn't really lower the price much. And so I wonder if Congress was waiting to see if the manufacturers were eating into that tax credit themselves, pricing their cars higher than necessary. Mm. And maybe now that they're seeing that the prices are sort of still staying up there, maybe that's they're saying, okay, fine.
But tax credits aren't not designed to lower the price of the vehicles. They're more incentives for more manufacturers to get in the space and then compete, and that'll lower the price. And so I don't think the price of the Tesla is going to really come down until Ford and GM and other show the sales that like eat into Tesla's market share.
GM makes the Bolt, brother.
Well,
we're doing all right.
But like not at the same volume of sales.
It's not.
I think there's one other piece that you you didn't talk about that's important. They're offering a tax credit for used EV vehicles of $2,500 if you make less than $100,000 a year or $200,000
really
married, which I really like because I think EVs are naturally vehicles that are out of the ability to buy for low-income people.
Wow.
And this is a really important sort of
That would be credit. New, right? That's a new thing. And where would that take place after if they were to be passed?
Yeah, if it would be passed. And then they said like all subsidies would be gone by 2024. So we'll see.
The Bolt has just hit the 3-year end of life for a lot of the first ones to drive off the lot. And so the leases are up in many cases. And so that's interesting.
And I think there's going to be resistance to this like buying a used EV because the battery is a consumable in it.
But you can check extent. You can check that with the whatever that's called, the OCD device or whatever.
I think people have to get over that sort of hump, that you know, kind of perceptual barrier. But it's coming. Like as you said, like we're in that sort of range where
we'll need ways to qualify the batteries and talk about how many charge cycles and how many miles. Like that will be a thing that, you know, Carfax and other secondhand car resellers and platforms have to build in.
Well, people are using these. What is that called?
Your mileage may actually vary.
The thing you plug into the port in the car. It's like it's not OCD. It's something like that, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So
on the bottom of the steering wheel.
Right. Exactly. People plug that in. There's an Android app that you can run, and it will tell you.
Do electric cars have that?
Yeah.
Does Tesla have that?
They all have it. Mm. And so at least I'm only on the Bolt.
It's
forums.
OBD, onboard diagnostics, I believe.
Oh, nicely done. You plug that in, you use a Bluetooth thing to an Android device, you can actually see how healthy the battery is, and it will give you the kilowatt hours, the current capacity of it.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. But it still doesn't tell you how many charge cycles it's gone through.
Well, I don't think so, but isn't that indicative? I mean, all you really care about is how healthy is it. It's not just charge cycles, because you want to, if it's all fast charging, that's going to kill the battery. Hmm. If you're doing, you know, 240 all the time, it's much better on the battery.
Yeah. Again, these are things that people need to be educated about. Last bit of tech news we'll cover on your Amazon Smart Assistant device. Now you can make it sound like a BAMF.
Yes, the Sam Jackson voice has come to the Echo, and guess what? This is not very good. Did you try it, Jeremy?
It's 99 cents.
I bought it. I tried it, but you have to You have to go through like layers of to get Sam to say stuff to you.
I'm telling you, somebody activated it in my household, and no one's owned up to it. Like it's activated, and nobody will say that they were the one that spent the 99 cents.
It's not that it doesn't become the default voice. You still have to say like, you know, Echo, ask Sam Jackson to set an alarm for, you know, whatever.
What's the weather or stuff like that. And he doesn't do everything.
No. Only a few things.
Yeah, it needs to be the new voice.
It has to be the default thing.
And that, like, that's totally possible. They just have to record him saying all the same sentences and do the machine learning and turn him into the voice.
You know, and if it was the case, I'd pay more than 99 cents for
it. Yeah, dude. Yeah. Like, who would you want as your voice?
I want, like, a British soothing voice.
Paul Bettany. Voice of Vision.
Vision. That's a good one. I was going to say, like, a Benedict Cumberbatch came to mind. Or an Aussie of some sort. Yes.
Yeah, before he was Vision, he was obviously that thing, right?
He was Jarvis.
Yeah, exactly. That would be that would be the voice. Yeah. Although the guy who does Kit would be great too.
Carla Gugino was Karen from Spider-Man: Homecoming.
So oh, cool.
Be a good voice.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Fantasy fulfillment.
Mm-hmm. And that does it. Oh, you know what? We're not done with tech yet. But before we continue with the next big technology thing we're talking about, I want to let you know that this is only a test. This week is made possible with support from Lutron Caseta Smart Lighting. A lot of people think you need smart bulbs to get smart lighting, but there is a smarter way. Caseta's smart dimmers and switches replace the switch on your wall so that all the lights controlled by that switch will act smart. Think about all the places in your home where one switch controls multiple bulbs, ceiling lights, bathrooms, chandeliers, and more. With Caseta, you save money by replacing the switches instead of replacing all those bulbs. Smart bulbs are only smart when the switch is on. If someone flips it off, you can say goodbye to smart control and connectivity, but Caseta switches are always smart, even when the switch is off. With Caseta dimmers, you don't need to buy smart bulbs to enjoy smart lighting. You actually get the best of both worlds, smart lighting control from an app or your voice, and control right at the switch. There's also smart features like the smart away feature that randomly turn lights on and off during the evening to make it look like your home. Kind of useful if you're traveling during the holidays, or, you know, if your hands are full, like with a baby, you can turn the lights on and off to get them to sleep. Get smart lighting the smart way with Caseta by Lutron smart switches. Learn more about Caseta at lutron.com/test. Once again, that's lutron.com/test, and thank them for sponsoring this week's episode.
Is that a Jeremy Williams original?
Yes.
From back in the day.
That's from the PC Gamer podcast days.
Wow. So it's the end of, not technically, it's not really the end of the decade, but it's the end of the 10 years in which we have the number one after 20.
Right.
In our year, in the way we count our years. It's end of 2019. So we will consider it the end of the decade for our purposes, and it's a good time to do a little bit of looking back and thinking about what were the technologies, we are fundamentally a technology show, that made the most impact over these past 10 years. I don't know how you guys want to go over our lists, but
I think we rotate through. Somebody, you pick one, Norm, and Jeremy goes, and then I go.
How do we do it in a way that, are we going to rank them? Are we going to say end that this was the one, the most influential technology?
We might not agree.
Impactful? Yeah. I concur that we might not agree. So let's just go as a roundtable, one at a time. Well, maybe we'll get to 10, maybe we'll 9. But let's talk about the most impactful technologies. I will start off with something very simple. I'm going to go 3D printers, consumer-based 3D
printers. Where were we 10 years ago with that?
10 years ago, we had not even built the first cupcake.
Wow.
2010 was the year we built the first cupcake. It was made available maybe a year before that, MakerBot.
Remind people what Cupcake is.
Cupcake was the first 3D printer kit released by MakerBot that was a split, at least at that point, it was based off of the open source design
for
3D printers. And that was out of New York, MakerBot, and we had built the first Cupcake CNC. And then we did our first 3D print in 2010, and boy, has the world changed since then.
How was the print?
It was fine. We made a cube.
It was okay?
Yeah.
I mean, by today's standards, was it okay?
No.
Yeah.
God, no.
I mean, I think the crazy thing that goes along with it is, the reason I didn't put that 3D printing on the list is the kind of rise and fall we've seen with it. And I think what's important about the cupcake, it debuted at World Maker Faire.
Mm-hmm.
And Maker Faire also gone.
But
at the same time,
I mean,
and not that 3D printing's gone, but it's gone through some pretty big changes in terms of its hype and the landscape and how it's used.
I think the trajectory of not just consumer 3D printers, but consumer CNC machines, right? Whether that's a laser cutter, a CNC mill, or even something like a vinyl cutter, that has changed how people, that has merged the digital processes with the physical processes over the past 10 years in a way that's changed making as a whole. And I think the 3D printer is the best exemplar of that, including its kind of dips and valleys and over and the trough of, you know, failed expectations and all that stuff.
And I gotta say, more often than not, I see people in forums that are not 3D printing related saying, oh, I have a 3D printer because there's something that comes out for the Quest or something that you need a 3D printed part in order to, you know, do something. And people just have them, like, more often than I would expect. Not everybody, obviously, but there's a lot of 3D printers out there because they've gotten so affordable. You have the Quest on the list. I'm just going to jump on that.
Yeah, take it.
And it's not just Quest. Like, this was the decade of virtual reality hitting, you know, the mass market.
Yeah.
There was the Oculus Kickstarter in 2013, and then it came to the first DK was the year later, and then DK 2, and then all the way to the Quest this year, 2019. And I feel like that trajectory was the most exciting thing about the last 10 years for me. And I did not there were some things I expected to have come further, but I did not expect to be experiencing the fixed off
tetherless
PC tetherless thing
VR for the price of a game console
in an all-in-one device by the end of the decade. Yeah. That is cool.
That's exactly why I put it on the list. It's the hands-free and affordable.
Yeah.
And just like sort of consumer ready, like anyone can do it.
Yep. Hear, hear.
I'm going to go weird with my next one. So obviously smartphone came out in like what, 2007, 2008?
Yep. iPhone came out in 2007.
I put the Nexus 4 on here, which came out in 2013, and it's not my favorite Android phone, but to me, it was the one that marked the signaling of smartphones going as commodity products, because it was like $350 when it came out. And it really signaled like Google doubling down on Android, and we saw the pervasiveness of the Android store come out as essentially a real competitor to the App Store. And it really signaled the price, the commoditization of smartphones, so that everyone had a smartphone in the couple years that followed. And so it wasn't the Nexus 4 in and of itself, but it was the price reductions that started to come at that time so that anyone could get one. Of course, at the end of the decade, we're now going the other way, where all the prices are going up.
I'm going to go next with drones.
Oh, which drone are you going to pick, though?
I'm not talking about specific products. I mean, obviously, I think there's the Phantom 2 that really gave us the first real taste of the potential for stabilized.
The 2V Plus.
Yeah, is that the one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, with the extender. Yeah, the Wi-Fi extender. But the potential of using drones as a cinematography tool.
Well, it was always available.
GPS stabilization.
To professionals, but that brought it down to consumer level.
I mean, same with VR and same with phones.
Right.
And then the rapid escalation of drone products, you know, in the 5 years since, and now the stabilization of the marketplace, you know, you go from Phantom 2 to now the Mavic Pro and the Skydio with autonomous flying and subject tracking, and that is a huge jump in technologies. And then also just the consumer awareness of it and it being deployed in public events, whether it's the Olympics or in Disney parks. Like, drone technology also is one of those futuristic things that change not the physical landscape, but the skies.
I feel like VR has hit like this milestone with the Quest that I have visibility on the trajectory going forward. Skydio 2 is the whole new thing. And I feel like that makes me reevaluate drones entirely.
We may be at a hockey stick moment.
Yeah.
Jeremy?
Echo, man. I mean, it's how my kids get information.
So digital assistants.
Yes. But in my life, it is Echo.
Right. And for a lot of people, it's Apple's device, right? It's Siri, because that is in so many things as well.
Yeah, but the always on, and obviously they have their speaker, but the always on aspect is key. Like, we have one in every room. The kids basically, you know, ask it to set timers, to set alarms for facts about history. You want to know something about John Carmack came up at dinner table. My son was like, "What year was John Carmack born?" Bam, he got the information. It's just that is ubiquitous in our house. And in their life going forward, they will be talking to computers because of Echo.
I think you also can't get away from a couple other consequences. I mean, first of all, it was cheap. That's why I think the Echo is the one to talk about over the Google Assistant and Siri and others.
Yeah.
But I think it was at the forefront of us talking about privacy in the home. Because all of a sudden now people are faced with having microphones in their house. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, was a piece of the surge against privacy we've seen in the back half of this decade, for sure. I totally think the Echo is going to signal a pretty big change in what home devices look like.
And automation.
I will say, home automation is the thing that I was like, that's the thing that's been most disappointing to me this decade. I feel like that hasn't really progressed in the way I thought it would.
And what do you mean by automation?
Like everything from, you know, that promise of like you pulling the car into the garage and the house lighting up and greeting you with music and everything.
The sous vide machine starts on.
Yeah, I mean, just like, you know, the jazz starts playing as you walk up the stairs. The kids just come down and like, oh, dad's home. You know, all of that stuff.
Wait.
Yeah.
You're automating your kids to come downstairs?
Well, because they're getting a notification of me coming into the garage, right?
Arms wide open.
No, I mean, there is that sort of fanciful, like, it'll make your life more efficient. And that hasn't been my experience of home automation to this point, that it's still a brute force.
Well, we're still working on connecting the home.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's so many standards that are fighting for, you know, supremacy there. I feel like what you're talking about, really, like, that's a byproduct of good AI. You know, we want Jarvis. We want somebody at home who is an artificial intelligence, who can take care of all that stuff and anticipate our needs. And I feel like that's really decades off.
Well, speaking of AI, that's what I'll take. I'm going to take DeepMind.
Yeah.
Just for
high
the
concept.
Not just for the concept, but what it like represents underneath in terms of the AI improvements. Because we can talk about DeepMind as being the really fantastical thing. It like really pushed the boundaries of computer science and artificial intelligence research in a way that made it very tangible that we see artificial intelligence passing humanity in really specific tasks.
Yeah, this is also the decade that we saw Watson play on Jeopardy.
Right. But at the same time, what I think that tells is the story underneath about the AI and the algorithms that are being integrated into our daily life. Like, you know, the 2000s was like get on the internet. Like everyone be connected.
Mm-hmm.
The 2010s feels like the algorithmic internet where we're all seeing different versions of the internet. And I think that's what DeepMind represents, is that AI integration into our life.
So if we're doing count, that's number six in terms of how many we want to count it for number. For me, I will choose next streaming video and the cord cutting as technology. Netflix being, you know, one of the pioneers there, but really the ramp up this decade with streaming video options, which coincide with broadband being more available. But
do you remember when Netflix like said they would no longer be doing DVDs?
People were freaking out.
They like made that a separate business.
Yep.
And now who uses them?
Yeah. Yeah. Who subscribes to that? And you know, how prescient for Reed Hastings to call the company Netflix, which works for, and not like Disc Flicks. And that works so well. And of course, you know, there's no other things really to say. And then also, I guess that ties with killer apps. You know, Netflix, when the App Store launched, was one of these things that people wanted to have as an essential killer app for their, whether it's a set-top box, whether it was the, what was that one? Not the Roku, but the cube one, the green cube one. You remember
oh,
that?
Yeah.
To, of course, things like Apple TV. And now it's just, they're not killer apps. They're just part of the essential package. Like you have to be on you have to be built into the TVs. So I would coincide streaming services with kind of this like the baseline, these standard apps that we expect everywhere.
Were we in the cloud 10 years ago? I'm not, obviously not to this extent, but I feel like you have AWS explosion on here. And I think that's absolutely true. And I'm not
we had Dropbox
educated enough. That's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. That kind of replaced the USB stick at the tail end of last decade.
Yeah, and that was 2008.
But yeah, I mean, the fact that you can spin up at whatever PC power you need now is just immensely just democratic. Like, everybody has access to what they need, and they don't have to, you know, load up on hardware and fill up warehouses and buy the space and overkill with, you know, their problem. That's massive, and that is great for small businesses. And that idea of AWS just pervades the cloud. Like, you have all of your services now in the cloud. You don't have to buy software anymore. Mm-hmm. You can rely on the cloud. And the rise of YouTubers, like, is that's the exact same solution there. Like, they have relied on a cloud service and Google to provide all of their distribution and ad revenue and their interaction with their viewers. Same with Twitch. They took it in a different direction. That whole thing is really, like, I don't know if I could have named a single YouTuber 10 years ago. Now, granted, I can't name any today either, but my son can.
Have you met Norman Chan from YouTube?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you do consider Tested a YouTube channel, but I still go to the website.
The part of the reason I put AWS on there is, like, it is the backbone of the internet now. Like, and I know it started before 2010. I think it started probably like 2007. But now everything runs. If AWS goes down, like 75% of the internet is down.
Yeah.
Like, it is the backbone architecture. It is the reason Amazon is the giant that it is today. It isn't because of Prime and delivery. It's like they made their money on AWS. They still make their money on AWS. I'm going to go with the Switch. I'm going to go totally different direction.
Wow.
I think it's the console of the decade. You think about what came out this decade. Xbox One, X, 360, PS4, PS3 came out this decade too. But the Switch is a mobile gaming done right in terms of a console system. It has two of the best games of the decade.
Of all time.
In Odyssey and Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
And I think it has taken the whimsy that we've known Nintendo for, that we saw integrated in the Wii, and brought it forward. It is like my kid's favorite console. It's my favorite console. And when I look through the list of all the consoles of this decade, it is the gaming console.
You would say that over like gaming on iPad.
Yeah. So, I mean, the iPad came out in 2010. So mm-hmm. that was going to be on the list. But I think that's going to be on the list for something different. Like, I don't think it's because of the iPad should be on the list because of gaming. I think it's just a ubiquitous tool for in tablets, everyone's yeah, house. Right.
I gotta say,
computing.
The Labo stuff is some of the best gaming experiences I've had this year.
And totally.
It had nothing to do with the video games. Like, it was all about making an interface to play a video game. It was fun.
I'm gonna go with, we're at 10 now. I'm gonna go with EVs. Mm-hmm. Electric vehicles, you know.
I mean, you should just say it. You should say the Tesla.
It's the Tesla. It's the Model 3.
Why do you say that?
Because it's the one that made EVs
cool.
Part of culture.
Yeah.
Like, there were EVs, like, going back to the Leaf, and we can go back a lot farther than that.
Well, I think it made it sexy. And the ironic thing about the early EVs was they were fun to drive, but they didn't look fun to drive. Like, Tesla made a sexy car.
And also the range. The range made it viable.
Yeah.
And that's not even talking about the technology platform that they've built in, not only the charging stations that everyone's kind of mimicking now and building their own kind of charging network, but also the autonomous driving, which I still think is unparalleled.
I think even some of the backbone stuff, like the battery manufacturing, which is like not as visible, but they invested so much money into that space. They forced other car manufacturers to get in. Like years ahead of where they had planned to get in. And the Model 3 was the reason why. I mean, you can talk about like the Roadster and the other ones that came before, but it was really the Model 3 that solidified it.
I feel like we're wrapping it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to give honorable mentions
Well, I have like a topic I want to insert here.
Okay.
Pinball. Because you guys don't understand.
Well, we have tilt warning.
I don't want to do tilt warning, but the whole you don't understand this because you guys come from technology world. But pinball, 10 years ago, the community was on Usenet.
Yeah.
That's where every conversation happened. Rec Games Pinball. That's how backwards it is. To this day, they haven't embraced the internet or Wi-Fi. But over the past 10 years, we've moved to the web, right? So that's good from the community standpoint. But competitive pinball has blown up. The number of registered players has more than quintupled. There's now stereo sound in the games, right? The lights have moved from incandescents to LEDs. All these things that you guys take for granted from, like, you know, we would have had 10 years ago in any other industry, pinball's finally caught up.
And there are new machines, lots of new machines being released.
There's been like 28 major releases from Stern over the past 10 years, I think I counted. The best player in the world has become a designer. Women have been embraced by the community and have their own leagues and have their own competitive circuits. It's been a fantastic...
As well as participating in...
Oh, of course, in you know, gender-neutral competitive competitions. It's been a phenomenal 10 years for pinball. 10 years ago, I swear to you, we thought pinball was dying. Hmm. Everybody was collecting old games, like 90s games, because Stern was uninspired. And we just had a game called Tilt the Battle to Save Pinball come out, wherein Steve Ritchie, world-famous designer, said pinball's slowly dying. Boom, 2010 to now has been the most exciting decade for pinball, I think, ever.
That was a documentary in 2008.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
My only honorable mention is Raspberry Pi, which I think goes hand in hand with the Arduino. I just put the Raspberry Pi on there because it was the first time that I saw Wi-Fi on a board like that.
Yeah.
And that was easy and cheap.
Yeah.
Other emissions, you know, obviously drive sharing and app, the app-based sharing economy is a technology that we're in the mix of. It's the later half of this decade, but has changed the way people get around and connect with each other in a commercial way, in transactional way. And then also, you know, the iPad, obviously, at the tablet form factor, which is derivative of the phone form factor, but we realize now it is not just the big phone, which it was when it first came out in 2010. It is a completely viable standalone computer platform that lives alongside laptop, desktop, as well as the phone.
You know, one of the
screen
arguments I heard for biggest, you know, tech products of the decade was Instagram, and I was like, Instagram, like, I get it has a ton of users. It's because they associate Instagram with like two real innovations. Like, it's where endless scroll came about, which is like now just a function of almost every app we use. And also, and probably more importantly, it drove the smartphone as a camera and connected real world to tech and actually drove it the other way, where tech was driving real world interactions.
And I would even go one step further and say Instagram was the app that turned everyone into not just a photographer, like the way the smartphones did, but also a photo editor. And it, through the power of networking and social connection, encouraged people to learn these previously very complicated skill sets, like photo editing and tweaking photos, just using the layer of filters. And now everyone understands photo editing in a way. Everyone's like a professional photo editor. I thought that was astounding.
Well, the democratization of editing photos can be applied to web design websites as well over the past 10 years. You got Facebook now. Nobody makes websites anymore. It's Facebook groups.
Pages, like, yeah.
You just create a new group, and you're the admin, and you invite people. Is it private? Is it public? Is it, you want a header graphic? It's all done right there. It's not even like install your own WordPress anymore, which used to be the easy thing.
Well, Squarespace. Drag and drop.
Right. Yes.
Templates.
Yes.
Are we missing anything? Wearables, electronic wearables, we're still kind of on the edge of that right now.
I feel like wearables kind of failed.
Notable failures, of course, with Google Glass.
I don't know. The watch, I don't know if anyone thought it's going to be all about fitness. Like, and that once, now that they figured that out, I think that they're progressing.
I guess when I say it failed, I think there's a lot of promise and hype around health, and that hasn't come to fruition yet.
I thought you were heralding the iPhone, the iWatch 4.
Yeah, but I do herald it. I think the tech is there. I think the societal adoption, the cultural valuing of that isn't there.
Well, maybe the acceptance of things like AirPods and of course, Apple Watch is a sign of things to come, wearable technology.
That the 20s will be the era of the accessory?
The digital accessory. Mm-hmm. If there are any other notable missions, let us know in the comments what were your biggest technology products, trends, ideas, even failures of this past decade. And we'd love to hear from you about that.
For a moment of science.
Okay, I'll admit, I'm the person on the show that really liked the list format, so I'm doing another list. I'm doing top five moments of science this decade, and we're going to start with one that Jeremy is going to play for
us. Are you ready for it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. This was September 14th, 2015 when this happened. Do you know what this is?
LIGO?
This is the sound of two black holes circling each other halfway across the universe. I'm going to put up on the screen, this is the actual detection that happened that day in Louisiana and Washington. These are the graphs that were actually recorded. And then they ran it through an algorithm that actually produced that sound. September 14th was the day they actually made the detection. We didn't hear about it till February the year following because they were trying to confirm it. This is the detection of the most powerful event ever observed in the universe.
A snap,
and
as it were.
This happened when they announced it in 2016. It was 100 years after Einstein first theorized that that we would have gravitational waves as a consequence of black holes. So it was just sort of amazing serendipity around that kind of timing. But I think that sound rippled across culture as much as it did
science. I can give you some more.
That's just a different algorithm where they changed the octave up higher for that. There's been multiple, there's been two other observations of black holes spinning around each other since in terms of the gravitational wave.
Oh, so now it's old news.
Yeah, now it's like, whatever. Show me something new. Show me three black holes. I'm going to go forward to, go backwards to 2012. Do you know what this picture is? This is from July 5th, 2012.
I know.
You know because you've been there. I've been in that room.
Exactly. That's why.
Jeremy?
I'm guessing it's NASA, but I have no idea.
No.
This is in Switzerland. This is the day they announced the detection of the Higgs boson
at
CERN.
Okay.
And this is a monumental achievement because even though it confirmed a lot of the standard theory, model for particles, this is the first time we saw and observed the Higgs boson through the decay of muons through this billion-dollar detector. A multi-billion-dollar detector.
Biggest machine in the world.
Where they smashed two protons together, and in the decay of the muons that formed, they're able to observe the signature of the Higgs boson, or the God particle. And Peter Higgs was actually there.
Whoa!
The person who theorized it. He was in the room that day. And it was that was huge, right? Everyone heard about the Higgs boson.
Yeah, the God particle.
All right, number three.
Thanks, Dan Brown.
Was two moments in 2017. One was April 22nd, 2017, and the other was August 21st, 2017. And it was when people actually went out and did something about science. So the first was the March for Science, which I was obviously involved in, where more than a million people around the world marched in protest around science. And then science policies. And August 21st, was the great American solar eclipse, where 4 million Americans participated around the country by going out and viewing the solar eclipse. We hadn't in the previous decade had moments remotely close to this, where there was such mass participation in events centered around science. So I think they'll resonate for years to come in the sense of, like, yeah, science can be an engine of people actually coming together as much as the discoveries themselves. All right, two.
Oh, we're doing this in order?
I'm doing this kind of in order.
That's exciting.
Two was the publishing of this paper. So the title is, you want to read the title?
A programmable dual RNA-guided DNA endonucleus in adaptive bacterial immunity.
Do you know what this is?
CRISPR.
This is the paper that launched CRISPR. This is August 17th, 2012. So this is started the DNA editing revolution. And this paper, it's only been 7 years since this paper came out. We're now at the point where we have human trials going on where we're changing their DNA to completely change the outcomes of deadly diseases. We're using this technology to essentially neuter mosquitoes and wipe out whole populations to prevent disease transmission. This is seen as one of the holy grails of biology right now because of the potential it has to deal with genetic causes of disease. And it's only 7 years ago that the first paper on this came out.
If this gene is edited out, say a deadly disease, is it inheritable? Do they still pass that gene on?
So there's two different ways to do CRISPR editing. You could do it in a somatic cell, or you could do it in a cell that actually is heritable too. So like the idea is like, yes, you can edit it in a cell like your skin cell. That doesn't pass on to any other generation. It just affects you. But if we do it in a cell that does pass along, like an egg or inside of a sperm cell, well, now you're changing generations. There's a huge argument about the ethics of making those moves, because any future traits, first of all, we don't know the consequences of that. But more important, those people that have generations that come, they have no consent, a way of giving any consent to that change.
Well,
about the trauma?
They have no consent to the change that comes from natural selection either.
Yeah, but that's the argument, right? You just said the word natural selection,
yeah.
Right? Like, we are making a choice here.
I hear you.
So,
but we make choices in natural selection as well.
We do, right? But that's why there's an ethics argument around this. This isn't a decision that only scientists can make.
I think we can decide right here.
Can you edit out the trauma?
The trauma of what?
Just the trauma of 11-2. Wounds need air to heal.
Oh, no.
I watched
him. He's quoting Watchmen now.
Oh, dear.
But I think if I can find my cursor, the number one thing from this decade,
drum roll,
is this.
Do you have the paper?
This is May 17th, 2013, an observation that happened at the Mauna Kea Observatory. This is the first time in human times that the carbon dioxide level on the Earth passed 400 parts per million as a regular measurement. We're now on at about 408 parts per million. This line was kind of arbitrarily set, but set by scientists as like, this is a no coming back moment for climate change. Climate change has been the science story of the decade. It's going to be the science story of the next decade too. This is the point when I think it broke the hearts and minds of a lot of scientists that we're in trouble. I mean, most of the one of the largest activist groups around climate change is 350.org. which is about 350 parts per million. But when this came out, May 7th, 2013, it was a weekly average that week at that observatory. This is the first time we crossed that, and we've stayed above it. And I think it will continue to be the biggest science story going forward. I hate to end on a downer, but I think it is the most important science story that happened.
Are you ready to announce you're going to get an electric vehicle?
I want to get an electric vehicle for my next car. It's
Very
just
good.
That I want to do... I want to wait till the end of my current car's life cycle to get an electric vehicle. I'm not in a rush to.
There you go.
The Earth is, for sure.
The VR Minute. Virtual reality this week.
Oh, a bunch of stuff happened in VR this week. Let's start with some big stuff. Well, I think last week we talked about hand tracking being released. Has it pushed to your headset, your Quest,
yeah,
Jeremy?
It did.
Your experiences?
It did. You know what? I feel like it's been conservatively tweaked since we tried it
at
Connect, where I felt like we could do a little bit of
occlusion.
Thank you. Of occlusion at Connect. And now it just stops. If you bring your hands close to one another, it just fades out. It doesn't show you the errors. It just fades it out. But, you know, it's. I can't wait to see what developers do with it. That's going to be the fun
part. Whole point of this.
I mean, I want to see this in big screen ASAP. or
just for gestures, not for UI navigation.
Not at all.
Just for communication.
Like, that's the kind of app where it would really thrive, like, right out of the gate. Yeah. So that you don't have to interact with some sort of spatial interface. You're just interacting with other people. And being able to emote with your hands and fingers, I think, would do a world of difference for communicating body language.
You know, we actually haven't seen that, because even with the Horizon demo, we saw it connect. It was social interaction, but we were still using the touch controllers. Yeah. I don't know whether the data points that they're analyzing through the DSP headroom that they have in the Quest can be efficiently transferred in low latency over network, so that you can tap into that as a multiplayer experience. I wonder if it's obviously more efficient to just render it locally, but how much more work would it be to send that extra positional data for a multiplayer,
because you
social.
Have the entire skeletal structure.
Exactly.
I'm sure that and on some level it's going to be possible. If they send right. it, you know, every few frames, new updates, if they send like an aggregate of all of the positions at once, that kind of thing, they'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's an essential part of social VR.
Yeah. For me, that's going to be huge. It makes me almost want to try podcasting in big screen again.
Once that's in there.
Yep, yeah. Yep,
so I have a dumb question, because I've tried it out. I get the push.
Yeah.
What is it active in any games?
No,
it's just active
UI.
In home.
And
right?
In fact, the SDK wasn't even available when they released it. It became yeah. available this week, I think.
So really, you can only try it out in home at this point.
You can browse the web. You yeah. can, yeah, you can't do much.
We have a couple of updates for apps. Big Screen Cinema was a big, speaking of big screen, this is something they had kind of teased and tested with the group viewing of movies of things like Top Gun a year ago mm-hmm. now.
Top Gun 3D.
And now they've announced a partnership with Paramount to do movie screenings that you can buy at regular intervals and watch with other people in VR.
Yeah, I gather this has been their agenda. Like, this has been what they've been shooting for all along. Four movies a week will be, you know, in the theater. You can go and watch any of them. The 2D ones will be $4. The 3D ones will be $5. And the show times are every...
Per person.
Per person. The show times are every 30 minutes. And you have 48 hours to watch the film. You can go back and watch it again if you want to, as long as it's been the 40-hour window. And the films are still in the movies, because they do change every Friday to a new batch. They're releasing in 10 countries, although not all movies are available in all 10 countries. It's definitely interesting. I feel like this is the beginning of something that could be really, really cool. Yeah. I'm not sure how popular it will be, because there aren't like events yet. Like,
they're not new releases. These are library releases.
That's the better first point to start on, is that they're not doing new releases. They're library releases, as you said. And apparently Paramount is just their first partner, but Paramount wants to see this succeed before they're willing to dive in with the new releases. Yeah. So if they can get enough people in there to show that it can generate revenue, they'll be able to bring new releases. And I think that would be a much more compelling argument for this type of experience.
So like they didn't announce this, but the movie I want to see that I think is like in 2 weeks is Top Gun.
Yeah, Top Gun 3D.
Give me that.
Yeah,
that's what we did. We got a free viewing of Top Gun as our test.
Oh,
last
you
year.
Guys watched that?
No, yeah,
yeah. Well, that was a while ago. That was.
But aren't they doing it again?
Yeah.
That'll be part of the library.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it's going to be a little bit of a tough sell, because $5 is, you know, it's a price. It's comparable to a price for a rental.
In fact, it is contractually comparable to a rental. They mm-hmm. have to charge the same as iTunes does and everybody else.
Mm, interesting. So it's a matter of, does the value of it being 3D and in VR, is that going to be compelling enough for Quest and Rift owners? Or is it the social aspect of being able to watch with other people in VR, which encourages Big Screen to develop more of those social tools?
Yeah, I feel like that's where the real appeal of this is. Like, if you can do a live event with a director Q&A
yeah.
before yeah. or after the show,
right.
with the director as an avatar.
J.J. Abrams swooping down in a Millennium Falcon.
Exactly. J.J. Abrams, this is not Fortnite, unfortunately. This is Big Screen, and it's a small user base mm-hmm. compared to Fortnite. Mm-hmm. But so if you can get a B-list actor, somebody sure. who was in the film, to come and share their experiences.
Every day there's a Fathom event thing at a movie theater where that's happening.
Right.
And we're just talking about the same thing in VR.
My personal dream would be to get the Riff Tracks guys to do a live show, not on screen, but in person in VR. Get the three guys to stand up there at their podiums and do perform it for everybody who wants to show up. They already do Fathom events in the yeah. movie.
You got to build tools for those performers, essentially, to have a different UI so they can have notes
yes.
and reference and things.
Okay. I asked Darshan after this was announced if they have those tools, and he said yes, and that these types of live events are a part of their roadmap. So that's what I'm most excited about. Give people a reason to go to a specific showing at a specific time. Make it an event, and I think they'll have no problem.
Make it a live showing. Like, how yeah. much would you pay if, like, Hamilton did this?
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
Like, where you could watch a live performance
oh,
of
I
a
thought
Broadway
you meant, like,
showing
I'd
of Hamilton.
I'd see avatars performing Hamilton.
No, okay. No. Wow, that would be bad.
Yeah.
No, but, like, you could watch, like, the Broadway performance of Hamilton
Absolutely.
That night.
Well, Venues does that all the time. There's yeah. all kinds of live events in the Oculus app. And that's, like, that is... Those ideas need to mesh. You're exactly yeah. right. Like, mesh live events with this big screen experience. And the other question that I had when I heard about this was, well, you can kind of already do that. If you
People
own,
stream.
If you own
themselves.
These movies yes. already, or if you have an account on something that can stream it, you mm-hmm. can open up your own room to yeah. a handful of friends and right. stream it privately. Or to a public room, but there's a small cap of users.
And that's the borderline, legalities are borderline there.
Right, but Big Screen has figured that out by the maxing out the number of players that can be in there.
And high bit rate streaming
well,
on their end.
That's the problem, is that you can only do a 3 megabit uploads on your videos that you stream.
Mm.
They're doing 10 megabit.
And, for 3D videos.
And they have access to the raw files from Paramount.
Yeah.
And so especially
yeah.
when it comes to the 3D stuff, that's going to look far better with their streams. Plus, it's going to, everyone's going to be in sync. There's not going to be dropouts. So there's definitely going to be a quality advantage to using their system. What I'd just like to see live events. I'd like to see more of a reason for people to join in, like live events, but also maybe, things you can do in that space before and after the movie together. There's an arcade. Let's make the arcade real. Add a void, style VR game that people can play as a co-op group.
For the first VR meet cute.
The what?
Meet cute.
What's that?
People happen to find love in VR at a movie theater
oh,
at
wow.
a VR experience.
Yeah.
I'll be a story to tell.
Yeah. And with showtimes every 30 minutes, what are the odds you're going to have a packed theater of actual people? Like, it's pretty low.
I mean...
That's like even like spacing them out makes it convenient, but it also decreases the chances
of
having...
Yeah, that's a trade-off. They want a lot of users.
Yeah.
Yeah, scale.
So it's hard. It's a hard, it's super cool, and I think it's a sign of things to come. Like, if I had a long-distance relationship with somebody, no doubt we would be watching movies together in big screen. That's a great solution. But I don't know. I'll be very curious to see how, without new releases and without, like, real carrots for people to, like, dive into something for an event.
Mm.
I wonder how successful this will be. I wish them the best.
We have on the Oculus Quest side a little bit of news. There was a surprise drop from Ubisoft. Bridge Crew is now on Quest. There is kind of cross-buy with Rift if you bought it in the Oculus store. If you bought the DLC, it's free for you. If you did not buy the DLC, it's $10
yeah.
if you own the original Bridge Crew. I haven't had a chance to try it on Quest yet, so I don't know how performance is. I was very surprised.
Everyone says it's great. The only problem is you do have to still use, Uplay?
Yeah,
for
login.
Yeah,
it's
so you have
two
to
forms
up,
of...
sync up your accounts.
And some people were having trouble with that sync initially, and I think they're starting to get over it.
Yeah.
Another surprise on the Quest side, Skybound Interactive. I previewed the Walking Dead Saints and Sinners at New York Comic Con. That's coming out early next year. And they had a roadmap that PS4 will have a release for that next year as well as on Oculus Quest by Q3 2020. And it was not a game that I expected could be ported to Quest, since the graphics are pretty good and the amount of zombies they have on the screen. So maybe they'll scale that down. People who've played Arizona Sunshine on Quest know that it's a different flavor of that game on the mobile hardware. But I'm glad that developers are able to build high-end games and then also then go that direction, PC first, and then Quest second, as opposed to Quest first with a PC version, which some game developers have done. Oculus Link is still in beta. It's working well for people. And now people have found that you can actually adjust the rendering resolution on your host PC. It does require quite a bit of tuning and hacking. You have to go, you know, into developer mode, actually edit some code. And there are some variables that you can tweak. I don't think you can increase actually bit rate, but the render resolution you can bump up to various degrees of success for people who kind of have those powerful computers. I wish it's something that Oculus would make transparent in the Oculus setting, even if it's a toggle between, you know, a base level rendering and something that pushes max bit rate, max resolution. But right now, it's something that you just have to dig around to find. There's also a new version of SideQuest. This is the front end that lets you easily sideload APKs for third-party developed apps, and super easy to install. You know, we're not going to go through our list of favorite SideQuest things, but I will concede, Jeremy, man, Quake 2 in VR.
You played it?
Yes.
You liked it?
It's so
good.
Much fun. I love it.
Yeah. Since you played it, they updated the engine. This now it comes with HD textures.
Oh.
So you got to re-sideload it, and your saves won't work, but it's worth it because it really, a lot of the elements look much better.
The two-handed controls, the
You tried that?
I did, yes.
Two-handed, yeah.
Two-handed machine gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that it just works. When you first load it up, it actually is in a windowed mode, and you gotta press a toggle, and then it does the full field of view.
Yeah.
But once you're in the full field of view, it's comfortable. I mean, anyone who's comfortable with free locomotion on in a VR shooter, this is perfect for them. It's exact. Now I want Quake 3. Now I want Deathmatch.
It really feels native. Like it feels like a made for VR game. It's
yeah.
But you're right. It's intense.
Yeah.
But I don't think we'll see Quake 3 on this gen. I think we'll probably have to wait on that.
Yeah.
He's working on Doom next, actually.
I saw some videos of that, and that looks good, too.
So the new version of SideQuest does some cool things. You can now install remotely, and you can also stream from your Quest to your PC for use with OBS using screen copy.
And I think that's relatively it. We talked about Boneworks last week. They did announce that there would be quick saves.
Okay.
In Boneworks, and not just chapter-based saves, because people are spending a lot more time in the levels than they anticipated. That's what I would recommend. If you're on the fence about Boneworks, wait till early next year when they release the quick saves before you start playing, or else you might get frustrated, because some of the stuff, you don't want to lose progress and get stuck on a level for hours on end.
What was the racing game that came out yesterday?
The racing game?
Yeah, on Quest. It's the old school. They used to play it on the Rift, the original Rift with a gamepad. You remember
Project Cars?
No, it's what was it? I'm checking it out. Where's the new release?
You know, I did play a little bit of that Twisted Metal style racing game.
Yeah, what do you think?
Deathlap. It makes me really want a GTA style game.
Oh my god,
VR.
Well, that's not a small request.
And I don't even think like that scale.
You mean like open world?
Not even need open world. It can be low res graphics. I like the idea. The best thing I like about Deathlap is that one hand can be, you know, latched to a steering wheel, and you're using that as your drive mechanic.
Did you do that?
I did do that. I did not like their implementation of it, because theirs was just not positionally done. It was just the hand rotation.
That's interesting, because I actually thought it was smart, because I thought this would get tiring, whereas this wasn't. Like,
I mean, you can also, people drive different ways all the time. I wish they kind of mapped a virtual steering wheel for me to even snap onto as a way to do like big turns, slow turns. And I've always wanted a type of kind of a hunting game, like the ship, where you're in a map in cars with NPCs, and two people are trying to find each other and suss you out from the NPCs, and then grab a blaster and shoot you and hunt each other.
Okay.
I've always wanted
that. Radial G is what
got it.
So that is the most intense racing game I've ever played in VR. I would highly caution anybody who's sensitive to against this game. If you want an intense experience, check it out. It's a racing game. And what it has, there aren't many racing games. If Deathlap and this one and VR carts, I mean, those are really the only ones. And I want racing games. What I feel like these games, that all those games sort of have in common, is they're not straight racing games. You know, they're weapon-based racing games. And I enjoy Deathlap just from a racing perspective. Like, I wish I could turn off the weapons. I want to be able to power slide and hit ramps and race against other players without having to worry about, you know, someone hitting me and going to last place. Like, that's what I want. I want someone to remake stunts or, you know, Test Drive, like the classic games, or Virtual Racing. Like, that would be my dream. If somebody were to remake those in VR, please do it. There have been a lot of other releases we haven't talked about. Vacation Simulator is out on Quest.
Yes.
Where Thoughts Go is out on Quest. That is. Have you played that?
No.
You guys should check that out. Where Thoughts Go, it won awards on PC. It is absolutely sublime. You get into these spaces, and they're surrounded by orbs, and you touch them, and you hear... there's a question that hovers in front of you, and all of the orbs that are surrounding you are people's responses to those questions. They've launched the app, they have played the game, and in order to progress from one level to the next, you have to answer the question with your voice. All of the orbs are people's answers. So it's like, what did you want to be when you grew up, when you were a kid?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's just like the most intimate experience you've had in VR.
That's really putting yourself out there.
It's awesome. And so they're like, you're surprised because you expect them to be flip answers or people joking around or saying, oh, my
mic's... Do they curate? They must curate after the submitted...
I'm sure that some sort of filtering, right?
Probably. Yeah. But they're great. And then it's just really, it's super cool. Because once you hear them, you now want to give an authentic answer.
Oh.
And it keeps you from trolling. So that's... Well,
does it, though?
That's well worth your time. But even more than that, first of all, Waltz of the Wizard is out. Climb is out. I'm not sure we mentioned that. But
love Waltz Wizard.
Norman Chan.
Yes.
You have to play, before anything else, The Under Presents.
Oh, yeah. This is from the folks who did Virtual Reality.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for a good chunk of time in the holiday break, but that is 100% on my list.
Do you know what this is?
No, I don't want to know. I know it's been highly recommended, but I want to come in. I want to go in cold.
Can I tell you
look
a little
forward.
Bit?
Stay looking for it.
I won't spoil the mood, the vibe of this scene. I just want to tell you, it's interactive theater.
That's all I need. Done. That's what I want.
Between now and March, mid-March, there are live actors who are in the game who are not other players, although there are other players.
Uh-huh.
But you'll see live performances by people who are hired to work in the game for the next 3 months. They're U.S.-based, so you can't play too late U.S. time. You have to sort of join the game when people are working in the U.S. But you will love this.
All right.
But it's
sold.
You do have to have a chunk of time set aside.
That's exactly why I've been waiting.
It is a game that's comfortable in VR. It does not rush you through things.
Great.
Okay, great.
There's also a game called Hello Puppets that's out on Rift. And it's kind of inspired by Five Nights at Freddy's. Really shares a lot of that kind of like horror comedy lineage, and this is interesting because one of your hands is a sock puppet, and it comes alive, and so it becomes an NPC that has scripted dialogue, and that, but you kind of are holding it, and it is talking to you, and
whoa.
I like that design. So Hello Puppets as well. But yeah, I 100% want to play the other game.
The Under Presents.
The Under Presents. Thank you. That does it for the not final episode this year. Of This Is Only a Test.
So you say.
So I say.
Just in case
so say we all.
Norm can't get us back together for a final episode this year, I want to shout out Wohawk, Justin aka Speed, all the people that submitted outros for us. And generally, like, the people that have been nice throughout, you know, my run here at This Is Only a Test. I always say nice things. Even the ones that created like the bot that like tracked who had more followers.
Oh, no, I thought you were timestamp bot.
Timestamp bot guy, so good. It's awesome.
You are saying this having not even read the outro's thread, aren't you? Do you remember what Norm said at the end of last week's show?
No.
He said, I hope there's a good one at the end of the year. Right? And I said, that was a good one, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's a note from Jesse in our forum.
From Mohawk.
Yeah, from Mohawk. Instead of a new outro.
Oh, no. Is he quitting?
Sorry, guys. You were right, Norm. My outros have not been as good as they can be of late.
No, they've been great.
I'm going to step back for a while and only post a track if I feel it is really good.
What?
Oh, no. I've scared him away.
What have you done,
I'm so
Norm.
Sorry.
Oh, man.
What have you done?
Those are the highlight of the show for me, Wohawk. So whenever you feel so inspired, I will be eternally grateful.
We got to give them the material.
Yeah, well, I don't know how that's done.
I'm sure there's plenty to mine in this episode. Thanks for listening. We'll use not a new outro this week. Let's go with the classic, Wohawk.
Let's go for like a super old one.
I'm going 2 years back.
Oh my goodness.
From something from Justin, aka Speed. Probably a classic. Let's see here. It's called Jeremy Johns.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
That's it.
Did you walk around the house like this, like holding your chin a little bit?
I put on my Lennon glasses. Yeah, I made everyone call me Steve. Hey,
out of context, that was great.
We didn't do a tilt warning, but I want you guys to know, you'll probably be more excited than I am, there is going to be a Rick and Morty pinball machine.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's sold out in a matter of hours.
Their voices,
it's already
too?
Done. Yeah, no, no. It's
yeah.
Like total involvement. Only 750 made, I believe.
What? So few.
Yeah, yeah. And they sold out extremely fast.
Oh my, that's so, going to be a moneymaker if you operate.
Yeah, definitely. And also, if you bought one to sell it.
Sure.
But also market. Just like that transporter gun, that's going to be awesome.
It's on there. It's part, of, the, part of the plunger. Yeah. Yeah, there's a pickle Rick. Yeah, it looks good. It's designed in part by a guy who made this... game called Total Nuclear Annihilation that people like, but Bowen Cairns is doing the rules. He's like a world champion pinball player, so it's highly highly anticipated. Thought you guys would like that.
Mm-hmm. All right,
all right.
See you next week.
Will ya?